Yeah, I feel it's very much about looking within and sorting out what you need and what you don't need, and not taking any more from the outside than you actually need, and working out what your parameters are, and you know, not being greedy.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Summer is here, Christmas is coming, and there is more optimism than we've seen in the last 2 years. Who better to talk summer and Christmas than a Deep in the Weeds favourite, a national treasure, one of Australia's very best chefs and restaurateurs, Annie Smithers. Annie, how are you?
Well, that's a curious question this week. I have finally succumbed and am sitting at home in isolation because I have tested positive to COVID.
Well, we contacted you to talk about the big C word meaning Christmas, and it turns out we're talking about the other C word that's been around for the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's not quite the Christmas bonus I wanted, Huck, but, I think that we're all adjusting to this new world, and there's a pall of inevitability about it. And I think the only thing that you can do is just say, well, them's the breaks, and look forward to when I'm allowed to go back to work, when I've stopped wheezing.
Obviously, it's affecting the sort of summer and Christmas that you're going to have for this small period of time. But what did it feel like when you got the news and that you may have COVID and that you do?
It's a process, and it is a thing that is, you know, the reality is that symptoms crop up and you think, and then you think, oh, you're racked with guilt, so you go and get a test. And there's a certain freedom in that time between having the test and then getting the results. But both me and my wife have got it, so we're the only ones in our house. So I think that sort of there was a bit of, we sort of hoped against hope on the day that we had our tests, and then first thing in the morning, we got the call from the health saying, you have both tested positive. And it's pretty crushing because I think, for me, it's certainly that that process of going through of, well, you have to put a lot of wheels in motion on a professional level. And given the nature of my restaurant, which is so small, it's, in some ways that's a blessing. In some ways, it's finally come undone that I'm the only one that cooks, because if I'm not there, it's not there. So it is I think you put all your adrenaline into getting it all sorted, and then you sit back and you actually think, oh, great. As if the last 2 years couldn't get worse, here we go, 2 weeks before Christmas, cancelling every service. And you just, as I said, there's a sort of grim inevitability about it, and I just have to, it's not a pleasant thing to be suffering from. It's a the thing that I'm finding most challenging is that I have lost my sense of taste. So hopefully that springs back. So you lose your taste and you lose your appetite and your breathing's pretty challenged. But I think you go through an existential crisis with it of sort of, oh. So, yeah, but let's move on to more cheerful things than having COVID.
Well, it is summer, although there's a lot of rain about it. It's hard to tell. But what does summer mean to you in regards to, your garden and food?
Well, for the past 2 years, we've been in La Niña events. So I think sort of when we first spoke, all that time ago when COVID had first hit and we were, the bushfires were still, the impact of that really hot summer and the bushfires and the burning were still there. So since then, over this 2 years is we've had incredibly mild weather, And for us in the, you know, in the Highlands of Victoria, as it meant that we actually haven't had to, we haven't had a spring for 2 years. So we had fires lit last weekend. I think about a month ago, we had a little flurry of snow. So this is the first couple of weeks that we've had any real warmth. So everything is pretty slow in our garden, simply because the ground's so cold and the ambient temperature has been so cool. So but the polytunnel is heaving with new growth of, you know, cucumbers and lettuces. Because I can't go to work, I have to give all my beautiful prize butter lettuce to my chickens. They don't mind, but I do. So it's been a beautiful lettuce for a beautiful season for lettuces and things, you know, cool climate things like that. But it is that beautiful positive sense of us, the weather really does start to warm up, and it has been, you know, really, yeah, you know, for us poor Victorians, yeah, you know, it's been pretty grim having two really long winters. So it brings a sense of optimism and joy and that sense of actually really wanting to go outside and do things because it's been a bit chilly.
What sort of fruit and vegetables do you look forward to usually in summer that you feature in the restaurant?
Well, right now I'm picking the first of the season strawberries, and they always they're that first sort of real sense of summer and sweetness and something that's warmed by the sun and is lush and delicious, and it's just that's the first fruit that comes for us. And then we move into raspberries, loganberries, and silvanberries. So the berries have delighted in the current weather conditions and are just exceptional. So at the moment, it's strawberries, and the raspberries they're a bit late this year, but they're hot on the heels of the strawberries. Beautiful crops of peas, snow peas, the cool climate things that are just absolutely delightful. As I said, lettuces. I love my lettuces. I just love growing heading lettuces. I think that they are how we've moved into sort of all this cut and come again lettuce, and you know that the absolute deliciousness of a freshly picked butter lettuce, or we grow an iceberg called Reine de Glace, the ice queen. So it's, you know, those perfect, dense, sweet, crisp, delicious lettuces. And they in turn are sort of that real harbinger of summer, because it's sort of, we shift from, you know, cold weather food to all the beautiful salads. So they make me very happy. And, yeah, lots of herbs are around, you know, the summer savoury, the chives, the chervil's just finishing, the tarragon's in full force, the parsley. It's just it's that extraordinary time post the bleakness of winter where you're reminded, you know, you're like a kid in a lolly shop being reminded of all those beautiful tastes and smells and delights that the warmer weather brings.
Speaking of being a kid, what was the Christmas period like for you as a kid? Is there any feasts or memories you can share with us?
As a kid, my mum always put on a very non-traditional spread. I remember we had quail boned quail 1 year. It was always she always glazed a ham. But other than that, there was not specific Christmas traditions. So it was sort of more a fancy 70s dinner party type menu, which is fine. Yeah, that's fine. But I think sort of the Christmas that, you know, still links back, you know, almost to childhood is the Christmas that was, I think, the year that I was first an apprentice. So that must have been, yeah, the Christmas of 1984. And mum was teaching at the time, and one of her students asked her, you know, and this sort of, you know, knowing my life as you do now, it sort of is the full circle of things. One of her students asked her in, I don't know, about September or October, Mrs. Smithers, would you like a goose for Christmas? We're breeding geese. And Mum thought, oh, yes, that'd be lovely. I'll have a goose. So she said yes to this kid, and the week of Christmas, the kid turned up at Mum's house with a sack, and in the sack was a goose, but it was a live goose.
Wow.
Yeah. So my mother rang me and said, well, you're a chef now. You deal with it. I was 18 and pretty green. I think perhaps I was probably a bit full of myself if she thought that that was my capabilities. But at the time, I was great friends with a woman who worked at a restaurant in Carlton, and I was living in Carlton. And there was a restaurant in Carlton for a million years called the Bullfrog, and it was a classic French bistro run by a classic Frenchman called Jean-Yves. And so Penny asked Jean-Yves if he could help me. He said yes. So I went out to home, got the goose, got in the sack, put it in the back of the car. That was a bit fraught because I think at the time I was driving a little Austin Healey, so it was a soft top and I was a bit worried about the goose getting out. So the goose came back to me with Carlton. I went to Jean-Yves. He took the goose out of the sack, muttered a few French, swear words at it. assessed it, proclaimed it to be a half-decent bird, and then duly chopped its head off and then set me up on a milk crate in a wet area at the back and set me to plucking the beast. And all I remember to this day, the only thing I remember about the actual bird and the cooking process and things was I was very disappointed with how small the breasts were. But all I really remember was the sea of white feathers it seemed to be an interminable process to actually pluck a goose. So it's sort of, I don't know whether it scarred me or inspired me or any of those things, but I don't it gave me my first taste of, I suppose, that incredibly real thing that, almost 40 years on, is that whole paddock-to-plate ethos, isn't it?
How do you like to celebrate Christmas these days? Do you cook something familiar every year, or do you go out on a limb like that your mum did and do something different?
Well, it depends on whether it's a year that I'm cooking at work or cooking at home. So if I'm cooking at work and we're actually doing Christmas for paying customers, it's fully traditional in terms of, I'll smoke fish and I'll glaze hams and, sometimes I'll have a suckling pig or sometimes I'll have, pork loins rolled or, and then I'll have a dessert buffet of all the Christmas favourites. And that's my favourite, so pudding and bûche noël and just on and on and on it goes. It's sort of, Christmas cake and mince pies and all the cheddar and fruit cake and trifle and I love it. I love all of that stuff. Christmas at home is a little different because there's now two vegans and a vegetarian. So it's sort of it's lots of non-traditional vegan Christmas things, which is not in some ways I'd prefer to be at work and sort of snacking on a bit of ham. but then it is that trade-off of sort of having Christmas with family. But I think the thing that I love most about Christmas is Christmas pudding.
What makes a great Christmas pudding?
A good Christmas pudding. Look, I actually make a pudding that is it's a slight variation of the very lovely Nigella Lawson's Christmas pudding, and it has prunes and currants and sultanas, prunes and currants and sultanas, apple, butter, all the things. Where she uses various sorts of alcohol, I use a lot of Armagnac, and I think that combination of prunes and Armagnac for me is sort of that quintessential Gascony, delight, which is, it's part of a region of the world that I love so deeply. But the most important thing I find with puddings is that it is how you prepare the fat. And it is, for me to get the texture right, it is that integral thing, that incredibly important thing where I use butter in mine, not suet, but I always grate the butter so that it forms that same texture that you get when you grate suet. And it's it just allows the pudding to have that traditional texture. And because I tend to put a few more prunes in it, so it's more of a plum pudding as opposed to a fruit pudding, is it just allows that little bit of space for the whole magic of the pudding to do its thing. And I like mine with plain pure cream, beautiful Schultz dairy cream from down here in Timboon, down at Timboon.
I'm definitely going to have to find a flight and experience this.
Well, listen, if you're really lucky, because I've got 2 weeks of Christmas puddings in my fridge, I could send you one. Then you could just boil it up on the day and have a bit of Annie Smith's Christmas cheer.
Well, I can tell you now that the family would appreciate that than anything that I would be able to pull together.
Well, let's face it. Seeing I'm in isolation, not much is going to happen. So let's see what I can sort out for you.
Well, one of the amazing things that you did do this year was release a book that everyone should have. It's absolutely stunning and a beautiful read. It's called Recipe for a Kinder Life. Tell us a little bit about the book.
I was asked to write it post bushfires. So Thames and Hudson, who published it, they were in, I think just before Christmas in 2019, they were having an editor's meeting, and they felt that there was a mood for more non-narrative nonfiction for people, choosing to try and live a little bit more sustainably. And Sally Heath, who became my editor on the project, said, "Oh, look, Annie would be good at that." So they approached me to write it. By the time that it was ironed out, all that stuff that you have to go through, it was just on the cusp of COVID hitting. So what was, I think, meant to be a fairly, I think initially it was meant to be a fairly, short, sweet little, exercise in sort of how to live a little bit more sustainably. It got sort of, the whole narrative got hijacked by that process that I was going through with that first 6 months of COVID. So it became a little bit more of a manifesto on where we're at or where I see that we're at, and what I do on a small scale on that what some would call naive, but that notion of the fact that we can't sustain the planet if we can't sustain ourselves. And it talks at length about climate and water, and there's a bit about mental health, and there's a backstory of sort of the curiosities of living in the restaurant industry and the pressures that puts on you. It's fairly honest in terms of the fact that it's not always easy. And then there's great swathes of it that are growing things and cooking things and delighting in, actually having your hands in the dirt and being connected to the food source. But I think the most important message that, I feel is in it is that if you can't sustain yourself within your work, your own work practices and life practices, we've got no hope at all of sustaining the planet. So it's about, yeah, I feel it's very much about looking within and sorting out what you need and what you don't need, and not taking any more from the outside than you actually need, and working out what your parameters are, and, you know, not being greedy. She says as she, you know, looks towards Christmas. We're allowed to be greedy at Christmas, aren't we? So it was a beautiful book to write. And it was, I'm very proud of it. And thank God we had COVID, but it was a lovely thing to have as an exercise over that first sort of 6 to 9 months of COVID.
It's a beautifully rich book, and as you mentioned, has threads of growing food and incredible recipes in it, as well as a way to look at and reflect and look inwards about your own life. Did the process of pulling it together have an impact on you?
In terms of whether there was a lot of navel gazing? I think it made me realize how through hard work, good fortune, kind and generous people around me, that I live an incredibly rich and beautiful life. It's not without its difficulties and its curiosities and its things to cope with. I think that it made me think a lot about how the restaurant operates. And I think that we, you know, over these last 2 years, that anybody who runs a small hospitality business is as tired and at the end of their tether as I probably am, in terms of trying to work out what it is that makes a good hospitality business and what makes it work in this climate. And I feel that sort of the reality is that I have a beautiful model that works incredibly well. It has stumbled at the last hurdle of 2021 with me coming down with COVID. But regardless of that, I feel that the industry is shifting it's shifting incredibly quickly to people making a lot of decisions about how their restaurant or their bakery or their food store or whatever, how it can work for them better, because they understand now that if it doesn't work for the people who own and operate it, is you're never going to be doing anything other than treading water. So, you know, it's almost as if this whole crisis has empowered a lot of us to actually say, nah, this is how I'm going to run my shop, and hopefully there'll be enough people who like the way that I run it to keep it viable and profitable. But and those that don't like that model, they don't have to come. So there's been a freedom in these couple of years, and for me, I got to analyze it on a very close level by actually writing, Recipe for a Kinder Life. But I think a lot of us who do own, small businesses, small restaurant businesses and hospitality businesses, is we've come out, we've got to this point and if we were the blade of the knife, we're pretty honed right now. We know what makes a sharp edge.
It's been a pretty traumatic and fascinating and revealing 2 years. What are you hoping for in 2022?
Well, I'm hoping I don't have to shut my shop. It would be really nice to have a whole year of uninterrupted trading. My prediction is, as much as I hope that that's going to happen, I am not convinced that we won't have another tough winter. And that is, it's very much like, Yeah, for me, it's very resonant of observing the seasons and the patterns of the seasons. And I spoke about the fact that this is our second La Niña event. So what I learned from last year has come into play this year in terms of how I will sow stuff, what my sowing windows are, what I understand about the temperature of the dirt, the temperature of the air, how all of vegetables and fruits, you know, work when the climate shifts for a year or 2 years or whatever. So running the restaurant is pretty much the same. I think that, I look at overseas right now and look at, that there is trouble in Europe, and it's the same pattern that we went through this time last year. So I feel that for this winter, there'll be a lot of planning for, the worst case scenario. And we all live on, we all live on the hope that, and the positivity that it won't be the case. But I think having weathered the last 2 years, is it would be a fool's errand not to consider the worst case scenario again. And also I think that, the onus will very much be on the business owners this time round, because there'll be less government assistance and all of those sort of things. So it's about making plans and, being incredibly careful and aware of the fact that this is what can happen. And, if it doesn't, you've saved some money and you've put stuff aside and you've worked very diligently to be as careful as you can. And if it does happen, it takes away the stress and the horror of it all, because we've done it before and we'll do it again. If we have to do it again, I think a lot of us will have the capacity to see it through. And that in itself, I think, it may sound negative and foreboding, but I think, in recognizing the problem, at least we're aware of it now and we know what we have to do. And that's a so much stronger point to start from than anything that we've weathered in the past 2 years.
I know the circumstances at the moment are not ideal. You've got COVID and it's affected the operations of the restaurant significantly. Do you have any plans for this little period now that you can't open the restaurant?
Well, COVID makes you very tired. Because no one can come here, I have my beautiful routines in the morning of, letting all the animals out, letting all the animals in, feeding things, setting up sprinklers. I'm heading off to pick strawberries after I've finished speaking to you. So I think the thing is that despite not feeling, tickety boo, is again, it's that. It's, I live in a beautiful place and I have a beautiful life, and it's leaning on that and remembering that and just accepting the fact that this is how it is, and enjoying the space that I'm in rather than, because nothing can change, it's not, I can't change the fact that I can't operate my restaurant. It doesn't, worrying about it isn't going to change the fact that it's closed again. So I just have to get on and, be positive and, wheeze my way through all the chores I have to do.
Well, Annie, it's an absolute pleasure, as always, to catch up with you. Hopefully you're not ill for much longer and you can get back to doing what you do, which is absolutely magic work. Honoured to have you on. Please have an amazing Christmas, and we'll catch up again soon.
Lovely to speak with you. Happy Christmas to you and all the Deep in the Weeds family.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector.
Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen.
Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast, or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au.
Stay safe and be well.